We'd love for you to support your local station and support Pop Culture Happy Hour by visiting donate.npr.org/happy. Later in the show, we'll tell you more. It's Star Wars time! Yay!
Stars, they're warring.
That's right. Star Wars The Last Jedi finally arrives this weekend. Luke, Leia, Rey, Finn, Poe, and Kylo Ren have all returned. This installment is written and directed by Rian Johnson. The battle between the Resistance and the First Order rages on, and we're talking about it this week on Pop Culture Happy Hour. Before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Here with me is Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
And also here is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, to help us navigate the complicated and often Byzantine world of Star Wars, is the only person to regularly navigate a world even more complicated and Byzantine than that. You know her from NPR's politics podcast, Tamara Keith. Hi, Tam.
Hello. I have chills just listening to this music.
Yeah. I know. This is the rare time when we can honestly tell you Tamara is the fourth chair in part by popular demand.
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. Yes. 100%. And before we get started, we also just want to say we're going to try as hard as we can in this conversation not to spoil the big stuff. But of course, feel free to watch the movie first if you want to go in totally cold, because there's only so totally cold that we can leave you. Yeah. That doesn't sound good, but it is good. Because we're talking about Star Wars this week on Pop Culture Happy Hour. I want to start actually with Glenn. So, Glenn, your review of Star Wars The Last Jedi is currently up on NPR.org. You can read that. It's a lovely review.
Aww.
Run down kind of your basic reaction to this film.
I liked The Force Awakens a lot, and I liked this a lot more. And I was trying to figure out why that is. Is it something to do with how these trilogies are structured? Because certainly Empire I liked a lot more than New Hope, and Attack of the Clones was also a movie. So I don't think it's that. I think what it is that now that we know these characters a little bit, they've shaken off that sense of fan service, fan fiction that we got from that first film, where it's like, how much of this is homage? How much of this is pure nostalgia? How much of this is a story that's being told in and of itself? So now we care about these characters, and we come to like them. The fact that we're introducing something akin to nuance in this whole light side versus dark side conflict, this ancient beef, means that now these characters can be characters as opposed to stick figures, right? So now somebody's every choice is not determined by what color they're wearing.
Yeah.
It means that there is a sincere attempt to introduce some questions about which direction people are going to go, which wasn't really a part of this whole thing, because it was, you know, it's based on this very classic Joseph Campbell monomyth, blah, 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 blah. But I just think that improves it as a film. And it's also really just incredibly well made and well edited.
Yeah. I also think that The Force Awakens was really weighed down with a lot of questions about, just like you said, you know, how much homage, like how do you deal with this pent up nostalgia? Because for people who had not followed the stuff like the novels and the kind of off screen, what am I trying to say?
The expanded universe.
Yes, exactly what you're saying. That was adorable.
For people who have not followed the expanded universe, it was really a return of something that they had not seen in a long time, and particularly if they never took to the prequels, maybe that they hadn't really felt immersed in since the early 1980s. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, because The Force Awakens is out there, and because, you know, Rey and Finn and Poe and Kylo Ren, you know, who has his own memes, because those characters are out there, you're not coming in with quite the same weight of expectations, and there's more, I think, freedom to make a freestanding film. Tam, what'd you think?
So I did not 100% love it. There were parts of it that bugged me.
For example?
I know.
Tell us more.
It was like small stuff, and I realized like Luke milking some weird creature and drinking the milk. I'm sure it's like a reference back to A New Hope or something, maybe, but no, it was just weird. and just seemed unnecessary. Like you say, it was well edited. I would edit that out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Because I do think one thing I took away from this is Mark Hamill's come a long way since A New Hope in particular. Because if you go back and you watch that film, for all the affection that I have for the kind of somewhat cartoonish space opera nature of his acting in that movie. I do think if you look at the original trilogy and then you look at this film, you really see how much he has grown as an actor in that time, which makes all the sense in the world. And particularly, it makes sense that he has really gotten very good at acting with his voice because he's done so much voice work over the last several decades. And, you know, for a lot of this movie, he's either, you know, he's got a ton of facial hair, he's got a hood, he's got various things going on. And so a lot of it is voice acting as opposed to face acting.
Yeah.
And I think his voice acting remains better than his face
acting. It has improved.
I agree. I find his face acting distracting and his voice acting really wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because he has certainly improved since I wanted to go to Kashi Station for some power converters. He's not that guy anymore.
Right. Well, they gave him some really rough dialogue.
I was going to say, there's some dialogue issues there too. I think he is acting very effectively with his eyes. They shoot his eyes in fascinating ways.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I could listen to that voice. I love his voice acting work. And that really shines through here to the point where I feel like there are a lot of scenes where he's kind of cloaked, you know, and turning around and like sweeps the cape over his eyes. And then all of a sudden you just hear that voice.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Stephen, what did you think of the film?
So from when I was a very, very little kid, I have always felt like I am more Star Wars adjacent than Star Wars obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were Star Wars obsessives. My friends were all Star Wars obsessives. If you walk into my mom's kitchen to this day, you will see a gigantic original Star Wars poster. I have been surrounded by love for this series, but it hasn't always really gotten its hooks in me. And as such, I often kind of march through these movies not quite feeling what everyone else is feeling. And it's very frustrating because it is entirely a me thing and not a movie thing. And I really, really enjoyed Force Awakens in part because I was dazzled by the meeting of high expectations. I was dazzled by the ability to take a movie that had this weird mixture of unreasonably high expectations and unfairly low expectations and found a way to make a crowd-pleasing, satisfying movie that introduced new characters and did interesting things with them. I found this movie kind of kept meandering and kind of kept getting bogged down in the kind of Byzantine logistics of getting people from place to place in ways that I found myself just shifting in my seat a lot. There's a point in this movie where kind of the plane's taken off and the wheels kind of like retract into the plane, and then it just starts paying off and paying off and paying off.
Yeah.
And at that point, I kind of went from like, not when are they going to get to the fireworks factory, because there's really a lot of fireworks
factory. Fireworks factory in the first scene.
It's all, the movie's all fireworks factory in a way. But suddenly it gets to some emotional payoff. It gets to some character beats. And I found that the last half hour of this movie really soared.
Right.
And I found it very, very satisfying. So watching it, I felt like your mileage may vary, because what is super interesting to a lot of Star Wars fans, a lot of these intricacies are going to be fascinating and exciting, and they're going to become part of the lore. This is the new canon. And for me, I'm just kind of like, when is the big lightsaber battle?
Well, speaking of that, and the reason I say it's well edited is because it does have these very disparate plot threads. And the moment you're talking about, when it all comes together, is a very intentionally well edited moment where all of these threads reach a violent turning point. And those violent turning points are layered on top of each other. So we keep cutting between them faster and faster and faster, deeper and deeper and deeper. So it builds up this layer of just this incredibly satisfying, emotional turning point.
Yes.
That's the thing. The other thing that works in this film is the sense of humor. They have located the kind of sense of humor that they want to inject in this, which is a sly, knowing sense of humor that does not break the film, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So this is that moment in Empire where Leia says, I love you, and Han says, I know. That's the joke, because what that does is it doesn't break the film. It's funny, but it also intensifies the characterization. It also underscores what we already know.
It's also incredibly romantic, I would point out. You seem to think that's a joke. I don't know what kind of a 13-year-old girl you weren't talking to.
He doesn't say it back is the joke. The joke is he doesn't say it back. He just accepts it.
He just absorbs the
comp. He just absorbs it, because that's who he is.
Yeah.
So what we get, as opposed to the very juvenile sense of humor of the prequels, you know, Miso blah, 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 blah,
right.
We get really solid throwaway visual gags, a sense of humor that enriches the film and doesn't bleed it of any kind of emotional stakes.
So you're saying this is better than the movie with Jar Jar Binks.
I'm saying, I'm going to go out on a limb here. This is me staking my claim.
You know, there is a Morning Consult poll out recently that showed that Jar Jar Binks has a 37% approval rating, which I find appallingly high.
That is higher than a lot of major national politicians.
Yeah, well, like, you know, he's not going to lose his face. He's never going to lose that face.
It's a very familiar sounding number. Yeah, so Tam, what did you think of the of kind of the use of humor in the film?
There were definitely funny bits, the porgs.
Yeah. I think it was the right amount of porg, I feel.
I think it was the right amount of porg. Any more porg and it would have been too much porg.
Yeah.
But there was some cute stuff with the porgs and some good droid humor, and I guess this isn't humor, but I love the way that Poe, when he gets reunited with BB-8 at some point, it's like BB-8 is his puppy.
Yeah.
And it's so sweet. Yeah. He's like rubbing his belly.
Well, you can see them trying to figure out, what does hugging a droid look like? Yeah. I was going to say robot, but I didn't.
You appreciate that.
Glenn asked me not to say robot anymore.
Yep.
You can see them struggling to try to figure out visually what should that hug look like.
Yeah.
And also, I would point out there is a creature in this film, a kind of new to me creature that is someone else who saw the film referred to it as a space horse.
Sure. Yeah.
I thought bunny. I thought giant bunny. If you think of a thing that might be a space horse or might be a giant bunny, it's what this thing is. And I liked those things. I liked the way that they were visualized. I liked those guys.
Mm-hmm. I think they have learned the lesson of Jar Jar Binks, that if you're going to put a cute, silly thing in there, really use it sparingly. Use it as little as just sprinkle it out.
And make it not racist.
And also make it not horribly racist. Yeah. But I mean,
little things.
The porgs are adorable, but the porgs don't actually bog down the dialogue in any scene.
It's not just Jar Jar Binks, it's Ewoks.
Sure.
That I think they learned from, which is people only want so much of that. They don't necessarily want the porgs to take over the battle.
Porg central plot point.
Right. Yep. There's
no just
like,
there.
And then because of the porgs, blah, 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 they're a much smaller part of the plot
than
that.
The only dig people really lay against Empire is that it feels like it's unfinished. It feels like you kind of get to the end of it and you're like, oh, I want it to keep going on. All this stuff, all these plot threads have not been resolved. They've just been kind of strung along. Here, I have no idea where they're going. Because a lot of the central, what I thought were going to be central overriding questions of this trilogy were answered and dealt with very decisively.
Sure.
I'll just leave it like that.
Yeah.
In ways that I was like, oh, okay, so what's happening now?
Right.
And that is, in a franchise that is this old and with characters that are this starkly, you know, simplistically drawn, intentionally so, that's fantastic. That's
exciting.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. And I think you know, Glenn mentioned the editing earlier, and that was one of the things that I was thinking about during the film while we were watching it. I was thinking about, because you do have people in these disparate plot threads, I think it's very difficult to edit that film so that they seem to be in the same film while they are in different stories. I think there are also some very clever contrasting cuts where you cut from either things that feel like there's a parallel, but just as often things that feel very, very different from each other, and they cut against each other in a way that makes the cut have a feel to it as opposed to just feeling like going from one thing to another.
Right.
I also think, if you've seen Rian Johnson's other stuff like Brick and Looper, his visual sense, it sounds strange to get into Star Wars films being visually interesting in a new way.
Sure.
Because they've always been visually interesting in a bunch of different ways, right? George Lucas had a massive visual imagination that was applied to these films in a way that, you know, jumped the entire industry forward and inspired a generation of people and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think Rian Johnson's way of doing this, there's a sequence that involves Rey in particular that I think is visually striking in a way that's different from the way Star Wars is usually visually striking. And I also think his use of silence is really striking and specific to him. And there's a moment when there is a very carefully inserted and thoughtful and important silence that's unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Think about what a deliberate choice it is to insert a moment of silence in a Star Wars movie, which are so loud and so insistent on that score at all times.
And it's not that Star Wars movies don't have silence, but they don't have silence there.
Right. Yeah, they don't have silence in space. Famously, they do not have silence in space, a place where they should have silence.
Exactly.
Instead, they have like cars revving and switching into second gear. That's the sound you get. But yeah, that moment is striking for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah, and I do want to give a shout to their continuing really inclusive casting and what a nice job they do with that. It is so funny to look back on that first photo that they released of the cast.
Yeah.
It's very early when they had cast essentially most of the white dudes and few of anybody else. And it, you know, we talked about it on this show that it looked like it was not going to be as inclusive as we had hoped. And it's really turned out to be very much so. There's a new Asian American actress, Kelly Marie Tran, who has a part in this. And she's funny and charming and different and interesting. And they're starting to be able to have more than one kind of woman. And they're starting to be more women who are incidentally present as opposed to being princesses. And
there happen to be a lot of female pilots.
Though occasionally, I just want to point out, Star Wars still does this thing I love, which is to introduce their kind of revving up to a battle sequence, and they show pilot, woman you've never seen before, pilot, woman you've never seen before, pilot, alien, pilot, guy you've never seen before, who looks like he's won a contest to get there.
Who gets exploded immediately.
And then it's like, and then Oscar Isaac, and you're like, which one of these plucky heroes is going to survive?
No, that's true.
Yes.
And I was reading a thread this morning from Alana Bennett, who's a critic who was pointing out that there are still essentially no queer people in this universe, in the films at least, which is, I think, regrettable and a piece of inclusivity that is lacking, not just in this universe, but in a lot of other ones as well.
I'm guessing there's probably a fair amount of Oscar Isaac, John Boyega slash fic.
Yeah.
You could say that, I have heard.
Yeah, and actually, if we go back and think of the one storyline I think goes on a little bit too long is the one that pairs Finn with Rose, played by Kelly Marie Tran, where they go to a different planet. Mm-hmm. And on that planet, I saw some members of the tribe, I think.
Yeah.
Milling about. I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
Just in how they carry themselves.
It's sort of the cantina analog.
So for me, that place where they go, it was like a Monaco or something. Mm-hmm. It was and to me, that was one of the most, as a political person watching this movie, one of the most political parts of the film where you're like, that person who complained about them parking sure sounds like a good old boy.
Yeah.
And all of these people and their wealth, and then she's talking about how they got, you know, they tested the weapons on my family, and it was sort of this proletariat are going to rise up and it's okay to destroy their beautiful casinos and their beautiful cars because they profited off of the military industrial complex. It was a very political
moment. Well, this is, again, I think what that's doing is it's underscoring the emerging theme in this film of moral relativism about how there's more to it than black and white. Because, again, the overriding political viewpoint of the Star Wars films are space Nazis are bad.
Yeah.
Right? So now, because we have a little bit more room to kind of spread out and know these characters, we're getting a glimpse of something a little bit more nuanced, a little bit deeper.
And you get the same thing with the character. There's a character played by Benicio del Toro who introduces some of that same nuance regarding the First Order versus the Resistance and all of that stuff. But I think Tamara's right that sequence is pretty overtly political. And it's pretty overtly political in some recognizable ways. It's almost a little more what Star Trek usually is than what Star Wars usually is, if that makes sense.
Yep. So Rose, played by Kelly Marie Tran, is kind of a resistance backbencher. She's, doing the support. But she's also clearly a fangirl. And I think that's an interesting thing to do, to introduce into this story about myths and these larger-than-life heroes, to introduce a level, a sort of a meta world where the people that we look up to as heroes are looked up to by the people around them as heroes. If they push that too hard, that becomes Mary Sueing, right? That becomes everybody loves us. I think that was an interesting tension to play with there, interesting thing to introduce into this.
Now, you guys mentioned nuance before, and I wanted to call out clearly the most nuanced performance in this movie, Donal Gleeson.
Yeah.
Remember Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending?
So Gleason plays Hux, mm-hmm. who is the kind of red-haired baddie from Force Awakens.
Lots of sort of stentorian theater nerd speechifying.
Yep. Love it.
If you're into that sort of thing.
Love it.
He makes a meal of those lines, all of which are made of ham.
Well, but it's self-knowing.
Exactly.
It's self-aware, I think, in a way that I really like. I understand why Tam was sort of lukewarm on it, but I had such a good time and I appreciated it so much and it made me smile so much. I actually, Arsenio Hall pumped my fist at one point.
Mm-hmm. I am seeing it again. Don't worry. I'm going again on Sunday. I just had a feel like the Benicio del Toro character. It bothered me. It was like, why are they having Benicio del Toro play Benicio del Toro characters?
Yes, true. It doesn't feel that stretchy.
I had some small nitpicky things that kind of just like burrowed in, but I loved that I actually cared about Kylo Ren in a way that I didn't in the first movie.
I think Adam Driver's very good in this movie. Yeah.
Yes, and they wrote some good stuff for him. They really fleshed him out as a person in a way that I enjoyed greatly.
Yeah. You know, we know you're going to see The Last Jedi, a lot of you, so come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and tell us what you thought or tweet at us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week, so come right back.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Little Passports. Every month, kids can explore a new country when packages arrive in the mail filled with activities, souvenirs, maps, stickers, and more. Or try Science Expeditions, which delivers exciting hands-on experiments and STEM activities every month. Little Passports has subscriptions and gifts for kids of all ages. Find special offers for our listeners at littlepassports.com/popculture.
If you like Pop Culture Happy Hour, you know what we would really appreciate? Head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a positive review. Say how much you like the show, and that will help other people to find it. Thanks so much.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Little Passports. Every month, kids can explore a new country when packages arrive in the mail filled with activities, souvenirs, maps, stickers, and more. Or try Science Expeditions, which delivers exciting hands-on experiments and STEM activities every month. Little Passports has subscriptions and gifts for kids of all ages. Find special offers for our listeners at littlepassports.com/popculture.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, a bunch of amazing content here at NPR. For one thing, Linda, I wanted to shout out your year-end TV package that you did with Mr. Glenn Weldon, Mr. Eric Deggans. If you're looking for one-stop shopping for a bunch of great TV recommendations, that is marvelous. I also referenced a couple weeks ago at NPR Music, we have been celebrating our 10th anniversary. That included a massive concert at Washington, D.C.'s 930 Club, and now you can actually watch those performances online.
Hooray!
We've already put up Justin Vernon from Bon Iver, a little favorite of my own.
I was going to say.
Jeff Tweedy from Wilco was this. Most of these were surprise guests. We didn't tell the audience ahead of time who they were. Margot Price, a gorgeous performance from The Balcony. Kronos Quartet is going up by the end of the week. And if you have not enjoyed the music of Tank and the Bangas, our Tiny Desk contest winner, we put up their whole like ridiculous bonkers half hour set with the confetti. You can watch me try not to dance.
Mm-hmm.
It is a good, wonderful time. Tons and tons of great stuff up on the NPR website right now. It's year-end season, so just packed with recommendations. Please go in, get lost in it, and tell us what you love.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
The Crown.
Oh,
it's back.
Season 2. Series 2 is here, and I am totally here for it. My opinion has not changed since the first season. I still don't know if it's good. I just know it's pretty great. There's a moment in, I think, the first season when the Prime Minister of Britain says in a sort of pounds his fist weakly and says, "We must restore the status quo," which is A, the quintessence of Britishness, and B, this show's governing principle. Because you'll reach the end of an episode and realize, what did I just watch? I just watched Elizabeth, played by Claire Foy, have a series of slightly uncomfortable conversations in a sensible sweater set and pearls. And you're like, that's it. That's all I want. That's kind of all I want. I would say the second season we're getting a lot more Philip, a lot less Elizabeth, which is not the right fuel mixture. And it's sad because we're losing Claire Foy. In the third season, Elizabeth would be picked up, played by Olivia Colman. Olivia Colman's great. Who doesn't love Olivia Colman? But it's going to be sad to see her go because she is so good at doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So that is The Crown, season 2, on Netflix.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Tamara Keith, what is making you happy this week?
So from very high culture to very, very low culture, I ran across this article in the Washington Post about a 6-year-old boy that made $11 million in a single year. That year being this year. Between June of 2016 and June of 2017, a boy named Ryan, last name we don't know, city where he lives, we don't know.
Good.
Yeah.
Probably good.
Leave him alone.
Who is the star of the YouTube channel Ryan Toys Review.
Okay.
Yep. Has earned $11 million. Now, I'm sure somebody's getting a cut. He should probably get some sort of an agent or a guardian or, you know, save this for college, Ryan. But my son, who is 5 years old, if he steals my iPhone, which he does with regularity, he immediately goes to the YouTube Kids app and starts watching these things from Ryan. And it's basically like a small boy and his parents, and you never see the parents, you just see the boy, and he'll have a pile of toys, and he will open the toys, and he will play with the toys.
So is this unboxing?
And that is it.
Is this unboxing? Like, wait, he's getting it from scratch, like opening the box for the first time?
They're like reviews, though.
They're allegedly reviews, but it's really... I mean, it started when he was 3. And I just have a little audio so you can you can get a feel for what this is like.
Ryan.
What?
Ryan, I have a surprise for you.
What?
Look over here.
Whoa!
What do you see?
It's a giant Lightning McQueen egg!
Yeah, it is!
A giant Lightning McQueen egg!
Let's crack the egg.
Wow. That kid is living right.
I was going to say.
Playing with toys and making millions of dollars. That's your dream, Steve.
Yeah, I was going to say that. First of all, that's my dream. Second of all, I just hope that life continues on this trajectory for Ryan and that this isn't.
Right.
You know, that this
hopefully he isn't peaking.
Like, life isn't all $11 million a year and free toys.
when he's 24, he's going to be like, oh, look, a Lightning McQueen egg.
And I
do want to point out, and maybe this is part of the problem, Tam, when you said, I have a 5-year-old son, my immediate thought was, you got to monetize that.
Yeah.
This kid is not on the internet. He is not on social media. No photographs on Facebook. And that means I am losing $11 million.
All right. So Ryan Toy Reviews and Ryan's $11 million making Tamara happy this week. Thank you very much, ma'am. So this is the time of year when I'm watching a lot of Hallmark movies, and you know how much I love those. However, this year, literally on a day when I watched a whole bunch of them, I decided to break up my long run of Hallmark movies by finally getting around to a film that I never saw, John Wick.
Because
I felt that it would be a good palate cleanser. Now, I'm late to this. B, Glenn has already spoken, I think, of his love for these films on the show before. But I do want to say, I am not a bloody violence person a lot of the time. But you never know when one is going to come along that will just tickle me in a certain way. And there's something about this, and it's the director also worked on Atomic Blonde, and which I also liked. There's something I respect about an action movie, a violent movie, where everybody just really tries to kill each other the entire time. They dispense with the cleverness of, like, I'm going to kill you in a sneaky way. Yes. I'm going to kill you in a clever way. No. Everybody's just if you have a gun and you see the person you're trying to kill, you just try to kill them.
Right.
I do not advise this for your small, impressionable children or even perhaps your impressionable adolescents. I endorse this only for a very particular kind of catharsis. But I will say it is well done for what it is, and it has a straightforwardness that I did not find entirely unpleasant. But I am so pleased. The weird career of Keanu Reeves continues to delight me. Here he is a hitman, like a retired hitman. He is the weirdest action hero in the world, and yet he's a really good action hero.
Yep.
That's been true since, like, Speed.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I will say, not just John Wick is making me happy this week, but breaking up my Hallmark movies with John Wick made me very happy this week. So before we go, thanks to all of you who've been to donate.npr.org/happy. Keep it up. Donate.npr.org/happy. Tamara's got to sit right here.
Yeah, I was going to say specifically don't go
right.
to the politics podcast.
Right, exactly.
That would be donate.npr/politics.
Oh. Look, we can cut this part out.
Yeah, it's just all going to get cut out.
I don't need your help.
That is a way, at that link, you can support your local public radio station, but at the same time, you can support us. We're so grateful for those of you who have already done it. Jessica Reedy has promised that if we rally enough, she will release the long tape of me trying to annoy Glenn Weldon to death by singing a Bridge of Spies theme song that I was making up on the spot.
Uh-huh.
Throw us a tweet. Tell us why you gave it the hashtag #WhyPublicRadio. We are grateful. We really appreciate it. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at @NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at @IDislikeStephen. You can follow Glenn at @GHWeldon. And you can follow our pal Tamara Keith at @TamaraKeithNPR. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at @Jessica_Reedy. And our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music that you are tapping your foot to right now. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Tamara. And thanks to all of you for listening. We will see all of you right back here next week.